Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme looking at all the latest tech news from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, please do. You can drop us an email or attach a voice message as well. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Sony will be returning to Tech Talk to tell us all about their Link Buds range of wireless earbuds. Hubert Pavalkovich has been at the Lived Experience conference in Birmingham, and we'll be hearing firsthand what it's like to be an RNIB technology volunteer. Hubert is joining me as usual this week, along with Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's going on. What's catching your eye this week?
I was browsing Facebook and I came up on an article from 9to5Mac, and the article was techie-ish. It was relating to the Apple Sports app. Now, the contents of the article is not what I'm going to bring up here, but what I will bring up is some buttons that popped up on the post. So I've double-tapped on the post, and you kind of swipe to the post, and you've got the like, comment, and share buttons. Next to that, I had buttons that were phrased as questions. The article is regarding Apple Sports app now supporting the teams for the FIFA World Cup in terms of notifications and updates. So the few buttons were, for example, you know, what's the new format of the 2026 FIFA World Cup? You know, what are the new updates to the sports app? So there were questions regarding content in the article. So I thought, okay, let's double tap on one of them. And I did. I double tapped on the kind of button that said, what are the new updates to the Apple Sports app? And it opened a Meta AI window. And I presume it would have looked at the link attached to the post, because it presented me with a straight answer as to what the article contained about that specific question. I've not seen this until literally recently, which I found quite interesting, because it enabled me to quickly get the answers that I wanted without kind of having to click to the link, read the article, find what I wanted. I thought that was quite interesting. I haven't seen this before on the Facebook app.
Whenever I'm writing a comment, all of these buttons pop up to like make it shorter or make it friendlier. You know, the classic sort of rewriting tools, which they are available on the iPhone and the Mac built in as well. But I think this is sort of Meta's own option, so everyone would get this. And yeah, I haven't seen that though, about giving you answers to articles. That's, or summaries of articles. That's really cool actually, because so many of these, I mean, I think 9to5Mac is pretty accessible to be fair, but so many of these have like ads all over the place, and they've got half of the article is in one place, and then there's a whole bunch of ads, or there's a whole bunch of videos that keep popping up and playing, and then the article continues further down. And the sort of reader mode, Safari reader mode, helps a little bit with that, but yeah, they can be a bit of a nightmare, a lot of these publications nowadays. So I mean, if that works, and as long as it's just going off the content of the article, then that's pretty cool. Jackie, what have you got for us?
I have discovered there is an app which I've had on my phone a while. It's called O'Ryan. I think that's how you say it, or it could be O'Ryan. But anyway, it's spelled O-O-R-I-O-N. And it's one of these apps that give you, you know, descriptions of objects and things that you find, or you ask it for help. And it's one of these kind of apps that do this. It's actually quite good. But what I've discovered is you need to wear your Meta glasses to do this. So if you put your glasses on and you open the O'Ryan app, what happens then is it detects that you're wearing Meta Ray-Bans. It asks you for all the permissions like camera, microphone, Bluetooth, and all that sort of thing. And if you give all the permissions, it knows that then that you're wearing the glasses, and it allows you to work with the app hands-free with your glasses on. So I haven't had a huge play with it because I've only just discovered it, but it's definitely easy to set up. So you need the O Orion app from the App Store, and then once you go in there, put your Meta Ray-Bans on so that it detects you're wearing them, and then you give all the permissions, and you can start using the O Orion app hands-free, which is actually really quite good. So you don't actually need to go into the Meta app and enable it in there. You do it in the O Orion
Is this
app.
public then? Because I requested access to Scribe Me last week. I think I briefly mentioned it. And it only actually came through at the time of recording, it came through yesterday. It finally got approved. But you had to do a bit of, because that's in beta, you had to do a bit of weird stuff within the two apps. So you had to download it from Test Flight. And then you had to enable developer mode within Meta AI, which isn't too complicated, but it did require a few steps to go through before you could go through and add those permissions. But is this just out there? Does this just work?
Yeah, this is just an app that's out there. It's free to download from the App Store. What I can't confirm at the moment is I've not had a chance to look, but I don't think it's on Android. I think it's only on iOS. So you download the app and you put your glasses on. Make sure your glasses are up to date, obviously, which you would do anyway, I guess. And you would go into the O Orion app and set it up from there. And it's really quite good that it knows that you've got your glasses on. I thought that was really quite interesting. So I had my phone coming through the glasses and give all the permissions, and then you can start using it. It goes, "How can I help you?" So give it a shot.
I'm going to try this. There are so many of these coming out now that they're on the glasses.
I know.
And it's good. I've had a very, very brief play with Scribe Me, and that seems pretty good. But yeah, I didn't know that Orion one was out there publicly now. So that's a new one for me to try. Natalie, I've got to ask, will this persuade you to dig out your Ray-Bans? Because you've been having a few problems with yours.
I've done a bit with them, but I just the stuff that they were originally designed for, you know, taking photos or videos, yeah, I think that works well. But I mean, was it last week? I tried to get it to read a menu and I thought, okay, my brother said I need to get smarter with my prompts. So instead of asking it what's on the menu, I said, what pizza options are there? And it read me out three. And I said, okay, what's on the salsicha one or whatever it was? And it said, there isn't a description, but the name suggests there's salsicha on it. Well, that's really helpful, thank you. So I said, how much does it cost? And it said, I can't comment on exact pricings right now, but in Pizza Express it costs this much, in Pizza Hut it costs this much, and in Spain it costs this much. And I thought, I'd really, that's still not useful. So yes, I am not a fan. Still not a fan.
Was that Meta AI though?
Yes.
Give these other apps a go though, because these are using their own models. So maybe
Well, the one
might
that
be
I like the
different.
most is Seeing AI. That's my
Yeah.
favourite. But usually when I'm in these places, as in this instance, I was with my dad. So he was like, John, let me just tell you how much it is. And
Yeah, fair enough.
I said, yeah. It's much quicker and easier. Yes,
Have you got anything this week?
I have. And actually, I'd forgotten about it until Jackie said hers. So I was looking to transcribe some audio. So basically, I had some audiobooks on my laptop, and I wanted to sort of look into something on one of them. Can't remember exactly why, it doesn't really matter. But I thought, how best do I do this? You know, I've got voice memos on my iPhone that can do transcripts, so maybe I like sort of re-record it there, do it that way. I thought that sounds quite inefficient, so I thought I'd try Copilot and see if it could do it. And Copilot's like, yes, I can do it. And then it turns out it couldn't. Because of I don't even know what the excuse was, but basically it couldn't. But what it did tell me I could do was open Microsoft Word, so just a normal Word document, go into, I think it was on the inside, no, I think it was on the Home tab. There's an option for dictation, and then next to it, there's an option for transcription. I opened that up. And I could import the media file there. It said it might take a while if it's a large file to process it. Actually, it didn't, just a couple of minutes, and it was a big file. So I was impressed. And then the transcript appeared in the document that I'd opened. The only trouble is I didn't, whilst I heard the progress all the way up to 99%, and I think it maybe when it's 100%, it didn't tell me it was done. So I went back to Copilot and said, okay, I think it's done, but I don't know where it is. And what I had to do is press F6 or Shift F6 to cycle around the windows kind of within the Microsoft Word pane. And I got to the Word document I'd been in and found, yeah, the full transcript was there and impressively accurate. So yeah, I was really chuffed with that.
That is pretty nice. I've not found Copilot to be the best AI, to be honest, in terms of like accessibility, and I don't find it the best, but I do like the integration with the Office apps. The only one we can use at work is Copilot. We're not allowed to use any others because they've got the organization version. And to be fair, doing things in Word or in Excel, because I really struggle with Excel. I can't do, not in terms of accessibility, but all these the formulas and the calculations that you can get it to do and the macros and stuff. Yeah, I don't understand it. So I find it really good for that. You know, I've got this spreadsheet. I want these cells to be calculated and I want it to divide it, or I want it to take into account something from this other worksheet and you know, work out whatever I need. And it does a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Copilot's the most accessible. I think with all of these AI tools, you know, it sort of comes and goes because they're constantly updating them at the moment. But what I did find helpful was if you ever have Copilot like generate a file for you know, like in your example, Callum, if you say, you know, take this spreadsheet, do these things, and then give it back to me as a spreadsheet, and you want to download that file, I found that just pressing enter on it wasn't really working. So what does work for me most consistently is if you navigate to the download link and instead of pressing enter or spacebar, use Jaws key plus F, sorry, Jaws key plus 8 on the number line, and that activates the left mouse button, and that seems to work most effectively for me. So yeah, Jaws key plus 8 stopped the whole cycle of windows opening and not actually doing what I wanted them to do.
Nice. I'll definitely give that one a go as well. Okay, I want to talk about Apple because there's been a huge story going on over the last couple of weeks around iOS 26.4, which we've kind of held off on talking about it because there's a lot of vagueness, and there still is. But we thought we probably should mention it and just give as much answers as we can. So here's the sort of summary then. So iOS 26.4, if you're in the UK, when you update, it will ask you to confirm that you're over 18. And you've got a few options for how you do this. You've got the option of a credit card or a driver's license for how you can verify yourself. And that's pretty much it. Unless you've got, sometimes it can verify based on your Apple account. This is confirming that you're 18, over 18. So if you've had an Apple account for 21 years, for example, there's a pretty good chance that you're over 18. So it can go off that. But if not, if that's not an option, then you've only got two options, either credit card or driver's license. And this is causing a lot of frustration, understandably, because I mean, for many of us, or pretty much all of us listening to this, driver's license is out. So that only leaves a credit card, which of course not everyone has. Now, if you don't verify, I have seen some people going around saying if you don't verify, then you can't use your phone. That's absolutely not the case. So we contacted Apple. They couldn't really provide many sort of specific answers with this. But what we've seen from other reliable sources now is that if you don't verify, it means that potentially sensitive content, which is mainly meaning adult content, within Safari would be blocked. So if you're in Safari and you tried to go to a site that's classed as sensitive and, you know, 18 plus within Safari, then that will be blocked because Apple have control of that. And you would also be blocked from downloading certain apps. So apps that are also considered 18 plus, you wouldn't be able to download. And things from Apple TV, which are 18 plus, you wouldn't be able to access until you confirm your age. It doesn't seem to affect third-party apps, So, that, for example, Netflix, if you try and watch something on Netflix that's over 18, it doesn't seem to affect that. But again, we're not entirely certain. I don't know if any of you guys have done the update and what your experiences have been of it.
I'm still concerned to update for that very reason, because I don't know if it will, because I've had my Apple ID since 2013, so that would be, what, 13 years. So I'm not really sure it will verify then, therefore, based on that. So, and I do not have a credit card, and I'm still waiting to get my driving license. Somehow, they don't want me to. Don't know why. I would like to update because it's got other features that I'd like to try, like the playlist playground, where you can actually create playlists using text prompts. But I'm concerned as to exactly what will be affected exactly. And I think that's the concern a lot of people have as to what exactly they'll be able to use and not use. For example, if will services like Apple Music not allow you to listen to certain songs just because they have one or two explicit words in them or something? You know, I think that's my few concerns as to what exactly I can and can't access if I can't verify my age.
I updated yesterday because actually I wasn't even aware that this had come out. I knew it was coming, but I didn't know it had already landed. And actually my phone decided yesterday to just stop talking, so I just thought a reset or an update might help that, and it did. But I was actually taken aback when I got the adult prompt. I had a credit card on file, so it was really, really easy. I basically hit continue and it said, okay, you're done.
Yeah, so as I said, I don't really know if we provided any assistance there to people. There is a lot of vagueness about this, even from Apple. I don't think there was anything even in the release notes about age verification for this software update. It just kind of came up. Obviously, as we get more answers, more clarification, we will try and bring those to you. I'm really hoping that they open this up to more forms of ID, because, you know, passport for many people would be great, would be ideal. But if you are worried and you don't want to take the update yet, again, just worth mentioning this, if you go to settings, general, software update, and then there's an automatic updates option in there, just turn that off. But yeah, we'll try and bring you more on that as we get it, and if anything changes. Well, another busy week for us. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. We're continuing our conversation with Sony. I'd like to welcome back Mike Somerset, the personal entertainment product manager for Sony Europe. We were speaking previously about the XM6, the over-ear headphones, and kind of the opposite end of the scale in some ways is the Link Buds range. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are really exciting products. Like you mentioned, they're quite different to headband headsets, and they're also quite different to regular earbuds. So what we're talking about now are small. They're essentially earbuds, so they go just small in your ear, completely wireless. But the way that they work and the main functionality is completely different. So the WH-1000X Mark VI was a noise-cancelling headphone. Now, these earbuds are what we called open style. So both of these models do not have any closed sound, meaning that when you're wearing them, you still continue to hear the world around you completely as if you're not wearing headphones at all. And it's really very, very clever. And it works slightly differently. So just to explain, we've got two models here. We've got the Link Bud Open, which was launched about 2 years ago now. And we have the Link Buds Clip. And the Link Buds Clip was launched just a couple of months ago, if that. So new models. Now, the Link Buds Open, it goes into the ear, but not into the ear canal. It sits just outside the ear canal, and it's ergonomically shaped, so it sits nicely and holds within the shape of the ear. Now, instead of having a driver and a regular driver that goes inside, and when I say driver, I'm talking about a circular disc that moves backwards and forwards to create the sound. It's the little speaker inside the headphones. Well, instead of having a regular driver, it has what's called a ring driver. It looks to me kind of like a Cheerio. It's like a small circle with a hole in the middle, and that sits at the base of your ear. And of course, that hole allows the sound to pass directly through it into your ear, which means you can continue to hear the world around you really, really clearly. But because we've got this newly developed driver unit, it's very clever, a wing driver unit, how it works, but that generates the sound and you're able to hear very high quality sound. So, of course, there are various different open earphone solutions out there. But one of the great things about the LinkBuds Open and the LinkBuds Clip, which I'll come on to in a minute, is that you don't sacrifice the sound quality that much because it's such a clever sound system. So you still get nice deep bass, very, very crisp and clear vocals and detail, sharp detail, while having this transparent sound. So that's the LinkBuds Open that sits inside. The thing that's a bit different with the LinkBuds Clip, as you can probably tell from the name, is it clips to the ear. It has, if you imagine a small circular ball with a loop of a loop coming out of it with a large or slightly different shape sort of oval ball. Now the oval ball goes behind your ear and the small circular ball sits inside the ear and it clips around your ear like that. And the benefit of this, firstly, I must say, and I must just outline right now, I'm a big fan of the LinkBuds Clip. I think these are both great products, but for me, I have the LinkBuds Clip everywhere I go at the moment. But the great thing about the LinkBuds Clip is it's very, very stable. It holds onto your ear so nicely that I would honestly say you can almost not feel it. You wear it for a few seconds and you kind of forget it's there. And that's what you want. You don't want to really know that you've got headphones on. And of course, we'll come on to it shortly, but this has also, it means you can leave the headphones on for very long periods of time and have direct access to your smartphone, to your content. So whether that's you're listening to music or whether that's a phone call comes in and you don't need to reach for the phone, you simply tap the earbud that you're currently wearing and you can directly start speaking to the person on the phone. So that's the purpose of these products, really. I would say the LinkBuds range overall, if you were going to sum it up, it's about always on. And that means you can wear this all day long, even if the music stops playing, you can keep wearing it and it can kind of benefit you in what you're doing, whether it's entertainment, whether it's work through phone calls or Zoom calls or what have you, or anything else. So yeah, that's my sort of summary of the LinkBuds Clip and Open.
And the reason that these caught my attention in particular was because for blind people, these are almost the ideal headphones. I mean, especially for out and about. I mean, for me, I do a lot of commuting and I'm always looking for something where I can still hear voiceover or I can still hear the directions coming from my navigation app. But the last thing you want to do is block out any of that sound. I mean, you try crossing a road when you can't hear what's going on. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
So was this a consideration during the design, how useful these could be for blind people, or is this a kind of accidental accessibility feature?
Well, no. Firstly, I'm really glad to hear that what you say about getting the benefit from the LinkBuds. It's fantastic to hear because we talk about that a lot in the office as well, and also in our conversations with the engineering team in Tokyo. But in answer to your question, actually, yeah, it was. Now, the models we're talking about now are not the first LinkBuds. There was the original LinkBud that was just called LinkBuds. There's nothing else to it. That was the first ring driver, so open ear earbud that we developed. And in Tokyo, actually, that was very much developed with visually impaired people in Japan as part of the inclusive design program. So very, very early in the launch of LinkBuds, it was actually used with a service called iNavi, which is something that's available in Japan only, unfortunately. This is a navigation app that can give you voice directions while you can keep hearing the world around you. And it was introduced in Japan, and the product was very much developed with the feedback of the people through this inclusive design program. So yeah, actually, it wasn't so much stumbled upon. This was something that right from the beginning, the benefit of this style earbuds, of course, when we launched the LinkBuds original, there were not many, very, very few out there. So right from the beginning, the concept was certainly making this great headphone for everyone, of course, but you know, how can this benefit people who, you know, with low vision or blind people who could benefit from something similar to this? So yeah, I wouldn't say it was stumbled upon. I think it was really there from the beginning.
That's really interesting to hear. And of course, you mentioned things like the office and work environments. And again, that's another case where you kind of always need headphones on to be listening to your screen reader, unless you're maybe using Braille or if you're low vision maybe. But, you know, in my case, I don't want to have everything blocked out and not be able to join in that conversation that's going on in the office. But I do still need to hear what's going on my computer. So there's that side of it as well. I mean, is that the kind of target you were going for? Like people still wanting to listen to things and keep an ear on things, but also constantly have that environmental awareness? I guess you alluded to it earlier, but.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, very much. So obviously remember with our other headphones, we mentioned earlier on about this, the headphone called the WH-1000 X Mark VI, which is the overhead headphone with noise cancelling. Headphones like that also have the ability to switch ambient sound on and you can hear what's going on around you. Now, of course, the significant difference with this product is there is no noise cancelling. This is constantly pure transparent sound. And I say pure transparent sound because the Mark VI are fantastic with that ambient sound, but it's still not quite like not wearing the headphones. It's still a little bit, you can hear a slightly different sound and maybe it's not quite as clear. With the Link Buds, in all sorts of situations, they are perfect for continuing doing what you're doing, but being aware of other things. So one of the situations we talk about is multitasking, when you're trying to do one thing and actually there's something else happening. And I think we can all put this in our own lives when this is particularly beneficial for us. For me, it was probably as a dad of two young kids and trying to do certain things while listening out for them and being able to attend to them as well, or whether it's, you know, you're doing something else, as you mentioned earlier on, in the office.
Yeah, as a dad of a one-year-old, I can completely relate to that one that you just said. Oh, you can't switch off for a minute, can you?
I can imagine. Yeah, well, absolutely. That's a perfect example. Yeah, so I mean, and in the you were saying in the office, I mean, I personally am very often in meetings, online meetings, while surrounded by my colleagues, and it's incredibly useful to be able to hear what's going on in my meeting while being able to hear my colleagues and just staying aware of everything at the same time. So yeah, I'm sure it's different in all of our lives, but it's quite clear that we generally as people in the world often need to be able to be aware of more than one thing while you're doing something else. So yeah, it's very beneficial for that.
And last time when we were talking about the XM6, you mentioned some of the other features like the voice assistant and easy access to answering phone calls and playing music and things like that. You don't really lose out on any of those features either with the Link Buds, do you? They're still pretty much fully featured compared to the over-ear ones.
Absolutely. In fact, the Link Buds Open was the first one that came that seemed to have, like, I can't say everything, obviously, they always seem to come up with new things all the time, but it seemed to have everything. You know, it was the, whether it's the gyro sensor built in so it can kind of tell way, you know, which way you're turning your head and things like that. So you could answer calls with a nod, for example, or you could decline calls by shaking your head, you know, things like that. To the AI assistants, I mean, the Link Buds Clip has also got an AI assistant functionality integrated into it. So yeah, again, you can just start talking to your AI assistant. And of course, it's a two-way conversation, just like it would be with your phone or with your computer. But you don't need to take your phone out. So you could be walking through town and having your conversation with your AI assistant. And it's super convenient.
You kind of spoke about the difference between the Link Buds Open and the Link Buds Clip. Can you give a bit of a kind of summary of why someone might go for one over the other a little bit if someone's unsure of what to choose between them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are a few differences in the design, the way that you wear them. And I think that really comes down to probably just personal preference and in some cases, ear shape. So for example, I know that I'm going to use my wife as an example. I'm sure she won't mind. My wife has very small ears. Well, she's, by her claim, she says she has very small ears and she doesn't like wearing a lot of normal earbuds. But actually, the Link Buds Clip, by the way they work, they clip on, they actually fit almost anyone's ears. I can say that, you know, you can say everyone, of course, but certainly the vast majority of people's ears would fit. Whereas the Link Buds Open, it uses a different thing. It sits slightly inside the ear and it has something called a fitting supporter, which if you imagine, it's a little kind of crescent that pushes off the top of the earbud. So it's the earbud itself, the driver sits in front of your ear, but that little crescent kind of pushes back up into the fold inside your ear and it holds it in there. And it's very comfortable. Now, one of my colleagues will not be seen without wearing his Link Buds Open. He has them everywhere because he says they're the most comfy earbuds he's used. I personally, like I mentioned earlier on, I'm a big fan of the clip. For me, that is super, super comfortable and convenient. So I think it would be that, really. It comes down to the individual and what they find most comfortable. One other little difference I would say, of course, the Link Buds Open are a couple of years old now and the Link Buds Clip are a bit newer. So I would say there's probably an argument that the sound quality is even better on the Link Buds Clip and it has a few more functions than the Link Buds Open. But I would say if you're looking for earbuds to have this transparent sound and nice sound quality and things like that as well, my recommendation would be to decide which one, which type of fitting you would prefer. I think you'll have a good experience from either one, I think.
So do you want to just give us an idea of the price and availability for the Link Buds range for those who are interested?
Yeah, so the Link Buds Open, that retails around about £130. The Link Buds Clip, this launched in early 2026, so it's a very new model. That one retails around about £180. That's what we'd expect it to see.
Okay, fantastic. And once again, we'll be hearing more from you as we continue this conversation, I'm sure, because they're the audio products. But as I said before, when we first got chatting, there's a lot of great accessibility work going on at Sony. So stay tuned. We'll have more. But for now, Mike, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, recently, I went to Birmingham for the Leadership Lived Experience Conference organised by a few charities from the VI charity sector, and it was all about showcasing the power of lived experience and also encouraging blind and partially sighted people to get involved in leadership roles. There were plenty of good workshops, including a few techie ones, which I managed to visit, and afterwards I spoke to some of the people who were running them. We've just been to a very interesting workshop regarding, well, the power of adaption, all about the use of technology and various things to solve different challenges. Joining me now are the people that have led the workshop, Mark Evans from RNIB and Darren Pascal from Guide Dogs. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So before we kind of talk about a little accessibility question, Mark, can you give us a bit of a summary of what the workshop was about?
So the workshop is an education overview to blend understanding of how we actually use our technology on a daily basis, including our screen reading, our magnification, and also our AI. But also, more than that, how we will adapt or use the technology to adapt into real-life situations. So that could be anything from even getting to here, for example.
Darren, one of the questions you've asked during the workshop was about an accessibility challenge that we've all had. And we've all mentioned one of our, you know, challenges and how we solved it. Can you share one of yours that you've had and how you managed to identify the right solution for you to solve it?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'd say is that obviously none of us want to ever be facing accessibility challenges, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect that we really should be. In an ideal world, everything needs to be accessible, and I think that should still be an end goal for everybody.
Agreed.
In the meantime, while we are in this interim state of things not being as accessible as they ought to be, are there things we can do in the meantime? There certainly are. So the example I shared was about getting a PDF that had been sent to me by email. I couldn't access the PDF, but it had key information in there that I needed to be able to obtain. And so the workaround that I found for that was to ask Copilot to extract the information from the PDF, tell me what was in there, which it did with very commendable efficiency, and gave me the information that I needed, which then meant that I could carry on. So, simple things. I think as well as the example, what was really great about this workshop is getting the conversation going, because we all face these challenges, right? And it might be that somebody's got an answer, somebody's got a suggestion that might help somebody else. So I think there are definitely, there's guidance, there's education, experts in the room like Mark, there are things we found out.
Takes one to know one, mate.
Yeah.
You're taking credit from yourselves there.
Yeah. But, there are obviously things that we'll have discovered, but nobody knows everything, right? So the more of us that we have in the room, virtual or otherwise, that are part of the conversation, the greater opportunity that we have to be able to find the solutions and maybe discover workarounds that we would never have previously thought of. So, yeah, it was that was an example, but it was far more about trying to cultivate a bit of conversation and mutual exploration.
Mark, when it comes to this workshop, what are you hoping will be people's takeaways after this workshop, whether it's regarding Copilot specifically that we've seen demonstrated, which I've learnt a lot about because it's not something I use myself because of not knowing much about it, or about having these conversations, as Darren mentioned, in general, what are you hoping will be some takeaways that people will have?
I guess for me, first and foremost, sharing that knowledge cross-sector to sort of bring up everybody across the different charity sector, the partners that are here today, so that everybody's kind of got access to the tool, so it helps the equilibrium of our learning and levels up the playing field for everybody, because again we have to work harder and a bit smarter from the point of being visually impaired, I always think, and if this can help sort of bridge that gap for us, then brilliant. But it's also exciting as well. Talking as a trainer and talking personally, it's one of the sexier things I get to train on. So why wouldn't I be enthusiastic about it? And why wouldn't I give people different options and ways to work through? So for me, there's quite a few different things to take away from it. But the fact that it's there for people know what it is, as I say, to explore and to see if it's useful for them. Because ultimately, with AI, it's about finding the right tool and using it in the right way, obviously with our policies and procedures in mind.
And I think what was important that was mentioned is that there's no wrong solution, because every solution is, suitable to different people. Some people prefer one thing over another, and the good thing is to have that choice. I think for me, it's all about having the choice of solutions, and that choice is getting ever greater. Darren, what would be takeaway you would want to share with people?
Well, I would say that exactly, Qubit, is that there will be usually multiple ways of being able to address or come at a challenge approach. And I think it's about discovering what it is that works for you in the time that you are facing that challenge. Sometimes it might be looking for AI to see if there might be a way that the AI might be able to overcome the challenges as I attempted with the example I shared. Sometimes it might be as simple as going back to whoever it was who sent you the PDF and sort of saying, well, wait a minute, do you have an alternative version of this? So sometimes it's technical, sometimes it's more about the relationships with one another, with people, with those who we're working with. To know that there are usually multiple ways of being able to move forward. And so I think that awareness, and I think that the subline that we kind of had with the workshop, power of adaption, but also navigating technology with clarity and confidence. Now, I think if there's one thing that I really hope we're all going to be able to take away from the session, it's hopefully a sense of greater confidence in our abilities to be able to face whatever challenges we're facing, regardless of the extent to which those challenges are being caused by the technology that we have at our disposal. Because ultimately, We are an extremely creative bunch. This conference is all about harnessing the power of lived experience and giving us the chance to maybe reframe some of those thoughts kind of consider to what extent the lived experience and shared lived experience that we have is actually an advantage. So I think having the opportunity to grow in our mutual confidence when faced with these scenarios, I really hope that folks will definitely be experiencing that.
Fantastic. Mark Evans from RNIB and Darren Pascal from Guide Dogs, thank you very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we just listened to a great presentation regarding artificial intelligence, AI, delivered by our very own head of inclusive design, RNIB, Robin Spinks, who joins us now. Robin, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
One of the things you've talked about as a main message of this is using how best to approach AI and use it as, and what to use it as. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
I use AI on a daily basis for lots of tasks, from, you know, refining writing through to making checklists, to doing industry research. But I think the big thing that governs all of that for me really is the requirement to be using AI as a companion and not as a replacement for human effort and human skill and intervention. So I'm very much using it as a companion in my activities rather than using it as an alternative to my input. That feels like a healthy balance and a healthy mix. And it's maybe also reassuring to people who are feeling threatened by AI, which we know a lot of people are. So it's just about having a balanced and healthy relationship with the technology, I think.
Can you give us some examples of how AI can be used day to day to, you know, make things easier to do rather than completely kind of replace things?
Yeah, on a daily basis, AI is tremendous if you're blind or low vision like me, because it actually allows you to have a description of where something is or what something is. So it might be that you have used, for example, Gemini Pro to show it my desk, and then subsequently asked it where my keys were. It was able to tell me that my keys were behind the keyboard to the right of the monitor. That's the kind of helpfulness that is so valuable for folk like us. So using it for spotting stuff, for getting descriptions, for creating research, for creating itineraries. And you know, on a daily basis, basically trying new things with it. But I think what we all need to do, Hubert, is just be cautious. We need to be... I'm a huge fan of AI, but I'm also cautious about making sure that it's not being over relied upon. We're not bigging it up beyond its capabilities.
Well, I think one of the things you mentioned there during your talk, which I thought was incredibly important, because when I use AI, it's something that I make sure I maintain, and it's maintaining that the ability for the human to be in control of what AI does and how much it helps you and how much we as people, as users, rely on it.
I think so. I mean, I think if you take a really simple task like booking and buying, you know, so booking a ticket for something, that would be an example of a task where I think we will be able to hand over to AI and be confident that it's got it right. But anything that's got more complexity or nuance, I want to be across it. I want to be looking at it and checking it and making sure that it's giving me the right information. You know, applaud it and let's celebrate it. It's incredible. But let's also just be mindful of its shortcomings. AI does get things wrong sometimes, and that's okay.
One of the things we talked about is screenless devices when it comes to AI, and that, you know, there are some screenless devices, you know, coming slowly being made. Not much about them is known about it. Can you share a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I was particularly interested in the OpenAI collaboration with LoveFrom, and LoveFrom is the company that Jony Ive, former Apple chief designer, set up. So we know that they're creating a device that's AI-powered, but it's a screenless device. So the idea here is that you'll be able to speak to it, and it will also use cameras to get an idea of what's around you. So I think there's a really interesting conversation about new modalities, you know, new ways of interacting. We've become, I think, as a society, to varying degrees, we've become screen obsessed. And that's kind of no more evident than when you look at young kids using displays and the difficulties of getting them off displays. You know, there has to be another way. There has to be another modality for interacting with technology that's healthier and that's about peace and comfort and confidence. So I think being able to combine tactile, camera feeds and audio, that's a really interesting kind of crossroads and something that I'm really keen to see more development in.
You've also mentioned that actually what I like a lot is tactile buttons and tactile controls returning again, which is quite nice.
Yeah, we've seen automotive in particular, we've seen a progression towards capacitive touch as being the only input mechanism. In the last 5 years, that's really switched to manufacturers like Kia and Nissan and Volkswagen bringing back tactile switches. So, you know, if you're a driver in an unfamiliar place at night, and the weather conditions maybe aren't good, you can't afford to take your eyes off the screen to stab around in a capacitive touch display on a screen. You really need to just drop your hand down and know that the switch in the middle is the one that's going to turn on your heated screen, for example. So it's that certainty and confidence that tactile affords people. I think the automotive industry is only just beginning to realise that actually that had such a huge value that we can't really operate safely without it. So we're seeing tactile returning in automotive, and I think that speaks volumes for the value of tactile as an input and output mechanism across all walks of life. So, you know, tactile is here to stay. In 100 years' time, tactile will be as valuable for human beings as it is today.
You've also mentioned smart glasses. You know, we've talked about the Meta glasses and their importance and how, you know, they've taken over by storm, but, you know, that doesn't stop the fact that there are other smart glasses coming to the market which may be equally as helpful, if not more.
Absolutely. The Meta glasses have been amazing, and I've got a pair myself. I really enjoy them. They're a great product. But I think, you know, what we're really keen to see in that space is disruption, and that happens when you bring on board other players. So we're really excited to try out the whole range of devices that will use Google's Android XR and Gemini in particular as part of the smart glasses form factor. I think that's really going to take us to a new level of granularity and information. And, you know, for all of us, it's just about opening up access, leveling that playing field, and just enabling people to live their best life with technology.
Finally, to finish off, what would be your takeaway you'd love people to grab from your presentation?
I think if you haven't experimented much with AI, go and try it. Go and try Gemini, for example, try Copilot. But think about how you can be in control. So use it and enjoy it. But remember that ultimately humans are a critical part of this continuum. It's about technology and human beings working in concert.
Fantastic. Robin Spinks, Head of Inclusive Design at RNIB. Thank you very much for speaking to us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
One of the most important areas of our work at RNIB is to grow and support our cohort of volunteers. Today, I'm joined by one of our technology volunteers, Jonathan Abro, who supports customers at the Grimaldi Tech Hub in London. Jonathan, you are very welcome. Can you start by telling us a little about yourself and why you decided to offer your skills as an RNIB volunteer?
A little bit about myself. I went blind as a result of retinitis pigmentosa. I was diagnosed many years ago, back in the early 90s. And over time, with slow degeneration, my vision went. And as I was on that sight loss journey, so I was having to learn about new technologies, whether it was screen magnification or inverting colors. And then when I got to the point of not being able to see the screen at all, I started using a screen reader. Of course, in the early days of iPhones and smartphones, it was very exciting to think about being able to have these amazing telephones that we could have so much on them. And so I started teaching myself how to use all of this, especially VoiceOver, because I couldn't see the screen and do the things I wanted to do once I got to the point of my vision going to where it was. So I learned a lot about VoiceOver to the point where when I went to the Apple store to ask them a question, they were asking me more questions than I was asking them. So I decided I was in a position that I could help people. And the best way to do that was to share some of that knowledge with other blind and partially sighted people. And that's why I chose the RNIB, because first of all, I started off as a roaming tech support volunteer and added in the remote tech support volunteering. But with London being what London is, it's huge. And so for me to get to somebody's home meant an hour there, an hour's lesson, and an hour home. I'd rather teach three people in 1 hour. So three people in 3 hours, sorry. And so I decided that setting up my version of the tech hub in Grimaldi would be a great way to do that. And thanks to you and your helping me with making sure that I've always got people to come along and be there, I'm able to once a month spend a day at Grimaldi and help sometimes four people for an hour each on a one-to-one basis and get them to learn a bit about their technology.
So how does the Tech Hub volunteer role work for you in terms of your appointments and what the kind of things that you can do to help customers?
Well, Jackie, what I arranged with you, in fact, was that you would source the customers for me, because for me to spend the time trawling through the list of people who are waiting for help wasn't really a productive use of my time. So we rather arranged it that you would go through that list, find people who needed help with their voiceover, and whether that's on an iPhone or an iPad, and even some with magnification, and you would set up appointments for me on the day of each month that I choose and let you know about that I will be able to go to Grimaldi. For me, it's usually on a Thursday, and I used to say the first one of the month, then it moved around. Now, it's whichever Thursday of the month works for me, or whichever day of the month, for that matter, works for me. And you then arrange the appointments. I've given you four different time slots, which is an hour for each person and a 15-minute break between each lesson for me. And then I go to Grimaldi, wait for the people to turn up and give them a lesson.
And for those people who don't know, Grimaldi is RNIB's London headquarters. And Jonathan has a space in there where he receives people who are booked in, as he says. And this seems to be working really well. How would you like to see the role and volunteers expand in order to support more customers?
Well, Jackie, as we both know, there are more people than we can help who want help. And so the more people who want to volunteer, the better. And it's not a great deal of time to give up. It's just a little bit of time and knowledge that can make the hugest of difference. You know, I've been volunteering. I was looking at back in my archives, and I started volunteering back towards the end of November 2017. And since then, I've taught a lot of people a lot of stuff, but some of them that really stand out and make me think about how worthwhile it is to be a volunteer and to help people. There was a young man who I taught, and he was really struggling. He couldn't even answer his telephone, and he had to ask his family. He had no privacy, and all he wanted to do was to be able to be a little bit independent. Well, with VoiceOver, I taught him to answer his phone calls, and with just that gesture, he told me I changed his life. We went on, learned some more together, and he then went on to get an internship, which that made my day. It really did. Another one was a young person of about 13 years old who wanted to learn to use Spotify with VoiceOver. And I taught them, and they found the song that they wanted. And they said, next time, can I teach you the dance moves? How amazing is that? One other one is an older lady who needed help, couldn't see her screens. And I taught her some stuff. And for the first time, not only did I get a hug, but I got tears of joy from this lady. So there's a lot to be said. I'm sure you remember, Jackie, I had one other really special event, which was I was nominated to be one of the volunteers to meet the King and Queen at Windsor Castle when the President and First Lady of Germany were visiting on a state visit. So I got to meet all four of them and have a chat with them, tell them about my volunteering role and talk a bit about myself. Now, that's not something that happens with every volunteer, and I certainly didn't expect it. But the most amazing things can happen when you're a volunteer.
I agree, because I used to volunteer for RNIB before I became employed. And I also used to support a local magazine in Belfast, which at the time was called Sound Vision Ulster, which was RNIB Northern Ireland's version. And it was very rewarding. I really enjoyed doing that and still do. So there is a lot to be had if you can spare the time to volunteer. And as you say, Jonathan, use the time wisely so that you're not messing around waiting on people that don't turn up, or you're having to run around booking appointments. So there are other tech hubs up and down the country. And like Jonathan, I would urge anybody, whether you're blind, partially sighted, or even fully sighted, it doesn't matter. If you have some time to spare and you love technology, then you are more than welcome to become an RNIB volunteer and see where that journey takes you. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today. And thank you again for your continued work in supporting our customers. I've had lots of feedback from people who say, you know, how rewarding it is on your part to do the work, but also the benefit that they receive from it. So it is from everybody at RNIB. Thank you, and please continue with that great work.
Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate your words. It's a pleasure for joining you. It's always good to speak. And I think my last thing I would say to people who are thinking about volunteering, just imagine if you change one person's life just for that moment, what you've done to make their life better. It'll improve your day too, believe me.
Indeed. And we will continue with our tour around the country talking to our technology volunteers on Tech Talk in the future. So do stay tuned for that. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Pleasure, Jackie.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to talk, well, Sonos speakers. We talked about it recently on the Tech Radar with me looking for Sonos speakers. This time we'll focus not on soundbars, though, but on a different Sonos speaker, the Sonos Play, which Elliot Stonehill, accessibility consultant, has been testing for over a year pretty much, I think, and he's here to chat to us about it now. Elliot, thank you for joining us.
No problem, Hubert.
So the Play name, as far as I'm aware, based on kind of the research I've done, is a fairly classic name for Sonos, but this kind of 2026 version is a bit of a different beast. So for someone who hasn't actually seen it, how would you describe this new Sonos Play speaker?
Yeah, so it's a Bluetooth and a sort of Wi-Fi connected speaker. For anyone who's sort of in the Sonos ecosystem already and owns one of their other portable speakers, they've got the sort of Roam, which is like a small Bluetooth speaker, and then they've got the Move, which is like the daddy Bluetooth speaker, if you like. It's massive. And then this Play sort of sits in the middle of that, really, sort of price-wise and sort of size-wise as well. Maybe describe it as a sort of smallish paperback book sort of size. It's got a sort of little handle thing on the back as well. It's fairly light to sort of carry around from room to room, and you could sort of chuck it in a bag quite easily as well if you're going away somewhere, where you probably wouldn't want to do that with the Move 2. That's sort of primarily for sort of moving around the house, really.
It kind of sounds a bit like a Goldilocks speaker between the tiny kind of Roam and the heavy Move 2. So after the year of testing that speaker, does it feel like just the right speaker, like a middle ground speaker, or is it trying to do too much? What do you think about it?
Well, I really like it, and I'll tell you for why. I love that it's got sort of physical buttons for a start off, which the Roam also has, but the Move is sort of touch-sensitive controls on the top, whereas with the Play on the top, you've got sort of your play pause, you've got your volume up and down, and you've got the sort of mute the microphone button to just support voice commands with Lady A and also Sonos's own voice control. So I'm a big fan of physical buttons. And obviously, as you know, I'm a big Sonos fan as well, so you can sort of link it to other speakers in your system. So if you've got it one in the bedroom, for example, and you want to take this into the kitchen or someone else, you can sort of link it quite easily and have the sort of same audio coming out of both.
Yeah, I do quite like the physical buttons. I think they're often very much missed in modern speakers. Whereas for me, that physical reassurance of a physical button makes a lot of difference. And I think what makes a lot of difference as well is ease of setup. So for our listeners who, you know, dread the kind of look out for the blue light, how simple is it to get out of the box and play music?
Yeah, I would say quite simple. I mean, I say, like I mentioned previously, if you're already in the Sonos system, it's very easy because you literally just turn it on, go into the app and add the speaker. It does also just work as a Bluetooth speaker, so you can use it as a sort of standalone Bluetooth speaker, and there's a Bluetooth button on the back if you don't want to sort of use the Sonos app or anything like that. Again, that's sort of fairly easy. There's a power button on the back and there's a Bluetooth button as well, and you just sort of hold that down and then obviously go into your phone settings to connect that way. So that's sort of quite nice as well. You don't have to use it with your Sonos system. It can completely be used standalone on Bluetooth.
Let's talk battery life. So there's a kind of wording that this speaker, you know, has 24-hour battery life. After a full year of testing, you know, of charging and discharging it, does it actually last that sort of around that sort of time, or are you reaching for the charger by tea time?
I would say that's pretty accurate. I mean, it comes with a sort of charging base, which I tend to just sort of leave it on when I'm not sort of using it. So it's quite nice. You can just sort of put that on there. You don't have to sort of plug it in. You can also plug it in and charge by USB-C as well. But I've sort of just got mine in a bedroom sort of on the side table, and it's just sort of on its sort of base most of the time. So that's sort of quite a nice feature as well.
Now, when it comes to durability, that's another thing with kind of these Bluetooth speakers. After a year of use, you know, has it survived, as I like to call it, the real life test? Or, you know, has there been any accidental drops, splashes or dust issues?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's fairly sort of drop resistant. I mean, I haven't sort of been outside and thrown it out of a top floor window to sort of test it that way, like some crazy people do with iPhones and things like that. But I'd say it's sort of fairly drop resistant. It's meant to have a pretty good sort of water resistance rating as well. Again, it's probably sort of been splashed a little bit in the bathroom, but I wouldn't necessarily want to take it in the shower with me just in case. But I think it's fine if you want to sort of have it by the pool or something. If you want to take it away on holiday, I think it would be sort of fairly resistant to that. The other thing quickly mentioned as well, I mentioned obviously it does sort of USB-C charging, and you can also sort of charge your phone via that as well. So again, that's quite a nice little feature on the speaker.
Now, in terms of the Sonos software updates and the app situation, you know, how has the reliability changed from kind of day one of you testing the Play and using the app, although you've probably used it for much longer than that, to the current kind of present day?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, sort of coming up to 2 years ago, the Sonos app sort of changed to the sort of from S1 to S2, which was a complete disaster at the time for sort of sighted people as well as visually impaired people. So, to be fair to Sonos, they have done a lot of work on the app since then now, and it is, I would say, sort of maybe 90-95% accessible using VoiceOver on iOS. I can't speak for Android, but they're also more than happy to sort of take feedback on the app. I mean, I've sort of reported a few issues back to them themselves, and I have seen them fixed in later versions, which is sort of quite encouraging as well to know they are sort of keen to fix any issues that users spot.
Now, we talked about, you know, you can have Amazon's voice assistant on this speaker, but regarding Sonos voice control itself, what is it like? How good is it? And what can it do?
You can play music. So if you've linked your sort of Apple Music service or Spotify, anything like that, you can play music. You can sort of set a timer, ask the time. It's fairly sort of basic, because I think the thing with it is sort of processed on device rather than sort of going out into the cloud. And back then, so obviously they, you know, it's a big thing about privacy and all that sort of thing. So it's sort of a lot based on that. So it's fairly useful. And obviously you can group speakers that way. So if you've got more than one Sonos product, you can use the voice control to do that. If I'm totally honest, I do still mainly tend to use Lady A on there though.
And can you do the standard Lady A functions? You know, can you use it to play radio stations, or is that also limited on the Sonos speakers?
No, that's pretty much it. Everything's fine with that. You can use your skills. The only thing, I think Callum mentioned it on your show the other week, I think the only things that don't really work is sort of drop-in and voice calls and stuff like that, which is sort of primarily for the Amazon's own sort of Echo devices. But yeah, all the sort of normal stuff you would do is pretty responsive.
I want to talk about the Sonos lineup a little bit, because there's a lot of products in there, and I've been reading all about it and how many different speakers there are. And granted, they kind of have speakers for, you know, every season, really. But if a listener already has an older Sonos one or an Era 100, is the Play kind of a new addition to the family, or is it meant to replace them, or, you know, where does it sit?
For me, if I was looking to buy a portable Sonos speaker now, I didn't have one at all, I would be tempted to go for this one, because I think it is sort of the middle ground. Obviously, it is sort of priced middle ground as well between the Roam and the Move 2. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're not sort of cheap speakers. I think the Play's launched at $299. In the UK, so obviously it is a sort of considered purchase, if you like. But I do think in terms of sort of carrying it around the house, it's a nice sort of weight. The sound quality for me is definitely sort of better than the smaller sort of Roam speaker. So I would plump for this Play if that's what you're looking to sort of get into the Sonos system, or if you've already sort of got some Sonos speakers as well and you're looking to add to it.
Now let's talk Bluetooth versus Wi-Fi for a little bit. For those who are maybe less tech savvy, can you explain, you know, why we bother with the Wi-Fi setup at home when we can just use Bluetooth? What's the kind of advantages of using Wi-Fi for this sort of aspect of playing music over, say, a Bluetooth connectivity?
Well, I think we sort of touched on it a moment ago. I mean, I love the sort of voice control, really. So obviously it needs to be connected to Wi-Fi for that. I do occasionally connect my phone to it via Bluetooth. I just find, like, it's a general sort of issue with voiceover and Bluetooth in particular. Sometimes the volume can fluctuate all over the place when voiceover speaking. It can be quiet 1 minute and then 100% volume the next second. So I do find that a little bit frustrating. But yeah, personally, I use it pretty much all the time on Wi-Fi. If I go away, obviously, and you don't want to connect it to sort of a hotel Wi-Fi or anything like that, you can simply just connect it to the Bluetooth then. But at home, it's obviously pretty much on the Wi-Fi all the time.
Now, to finish off, an interesting question for you. Now, we've discussed that Sonos has a lot of speakers for portability. For non-portability, it's got soundbars, as I mentioned in the intro. If there was one speaker you would like to see Sonos add to their lineup, or one device, is there anything you can come up with?
I would say, I mean, they launched their first pair of headphones a year or two ago now. And I was a little bit disappointed that they were Bluetooth only and you couldn't necessarily connect via Wi-Fi. They've got a nice little trick where you can sort of transfer the audio from the soundbar, if you've got one, to the headphones by just sort of pressing and holding a button on the headphones, which is quite nice. But I wouldn't say it's sort of fully integrated into the Sonos system, because it hasn't got that Wi-Fi connectivity. It's just Bluetooth. So for me, I think I would probably say a Wi-Fi pair of Sonos headphones.
Fantastic. Well, it's quite interesting to explore the Sonos line. I think some people who are new to it, you know, will be very interested to hear what you had to say there. But yes, thank you very much, accessibility consultant Elliot Stonehill, for joining us here to talk all things Sonos Play here on R&IB Tech Talk.
And that is it from us for another week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and being with us. If you want to get in contact with us, if you've got anything that you want to share, or any feedback or comments or questions, whatever you like, really, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all-important email address. We'll be back with you, same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.